Are you ready to go meta? Major corporations are betting big on the idea that we're going to be spending more and more of our time in virtual worlds. But what if they're wrong? After all, as useful and convenient as digital life can be, aren't you getting a little sick of it? Wouldn't you rather be spending more of your time in the real world, with real people, smelling real flowers, and climbing real mountains? Well, the resistance is here, my friends, and one of its clearest voices is David Sacks, author of the new book, The Future is Analog: How to Create a More Human World. David is a best-selling writer, a journalist, and keynote speaker, and he joins us now to share five big ideas from his manifesto.
Hi, this is David Sacks. I am a journalist and author and speaker. I'm the writer of the new book, The Future is Analog: How to Create a More Human World. Today, I want to present you with five great insights on the future. The first one is don't get distracted by gadgets. When I was growing up in the past, 43 years, the 1980s, the 90s, and so on, the future was always something I saw through technology, through gadgets. I thought of seeing new things, new consumer products like cell phones and smartphones and CD-ROMs and the internet. And even the pop culture that I was into, Star Trek and Star Wars, movies like Demolition Man, Terminator, The Matrix. Everything in the future was always about the technology they had, the communicators and the phasers and the three seashells that cleaned your butt in Demolition Man. The idea that, you know, you would eat food out of a tube and you can sort of talk through holograms. This is what captured my imagination. So much of our future and the way we look at it is focused on technology. But technology, while it's important, is really a distraction. And we tend to lose focus on that when we see the future and view the future through the lens of technology. Remember when CD-ROMs were the big thing that were going to change the world? Or the convergence of different companies through digital, like AOL and Time Warner? Or how every company was going to be completely transformed by big data? Or how wearables were going to completely change healthcare? The reality is, little if none of that have come to pass, but we spent so much time and effort and money looking for solutions and building solutions around the future of those different technologies that we lost sight of bigger trends. When we focus on technology and we view the future through a new technology, a gadget, software, hardware, some sort of new toy, we get a very narrow version of the future because the future that we're building is only being built through the lens of what's capable of that particular technology. And what happens is we miss the bigger trends and shifts that are happening that are actually the more important things that will affect our future. This is the stuff that affects us at a species level. Gadgets are cool and shiny. They make for great presentations, press releases, TV commercials, Super Bowl ads. But the really big stuff that changes the world is far more complex, far more dynamic, and really something that relates to us more on a human level, and by that I mean sort of a biological, psychological level. It's stuff that's out there in the world, like the slowly rising level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that is changing the world, the physical world that we live in, and actually has a real impact for the survival of our species. It's the changing dynamics of disease and habitat loss that lead to things like pandemics. It's the shifting attitudes towards political ideals, the shifting attitudes towards attitudes like racism, which again have tremendous political changes. But when we think of only, oh, well, the future is going to be this cool new shiny thing I saw an ad for, and let's think about how we change our trajectory, whether it's our own lives or let's say a company's around that, we're really missing out on the bigger picture. The second insight about the future is that you have to be honest about the future you want and push back against the future that you're told you should want. People love to tell us about the future we want, and nobody does this more than someone trying to sell something, whether selling a product or a service, whether it's, in this case, hardware or software. For much of the past century, there were people pushing different technologies that were selling them as the future of education. Thomas Edison was known for selling phonographs and radio transmissions and film lectures as the future of schools. He said, you know, we wouldn't need schools, we wouldn't need buildings, we wouldn't need teachers. Everything would be filmed and people would be able to just watch it and they would be educated. And this is not really any different from the ed tech business. That's a multi-billion dollar business that's grown up around Silicon Valley over the past couple decades that pushed different hardware, software as the future of education. You had CD-ROMs being the future of education. You had one laptop per child being the future of education, where they would literally drop these hand-cranked laptops from airplanes into remote villages in Africa, always just Africa, not a specific country. And, you know, people would get them and the kids would just learn from that. You had the MOOC movement of Sebastian Thurn and the people from Google who would film every great lecture from universities and people could watch them for free and they would educate themselves. And all of these things leading up to the pandemic were a failure. And yet they were consistently pushed as this is the future that you're going to want. This is the future that is good for schools. It's going to make education equal and better. And I think what we saw was that as every student in the world from kindergarten to university went online and actually tried to live for the future, it was a horrible, miserable, global failure. Nobody liked to learn this way. Nobody did very well. And everyone was, you know, just tearing their hair out trying to send their kids or themselves back to school. So what did we learn from this? We learned that the reality of a certain future that's pitched to us is often very different from the sales that are there. And the lesson is you have to be honest about the future you actually want and you have to fight for that future, because just because someone's telling you that this is something you want, it doesn't mean you have to accept that. The third insight on the future, the third great insight on the future, is that progress in the future is just as often something old brought back or made new again as it is something new and shiny, right? The future of transportation, as we've heard about for the past decade, is automated, automatic, self-driving, intelligent cars, electric cars, of course, they're beautiful. And cities have been, and countries have been, twisting themselves around to be the leaders in this, the first to adopt it, to build their infrastructure around self-driving cars, smart cars, fleets of self-driving cars. These are going to be the solutions to traffic and congestion, to pedestrian safety, to underfunded public transit systems. Even, you know, one city decided this is their solution to miscarriages and the deaths of young Black children in underserved areas. Self-driving cars, they're going to drive them to the hospital. But what did we learn about in the pandemic? We learned that the future of transport in cities, actually the thing with the biggest impact that we've seen over the past couple decades, is not new technology, it's old. It's the bicycle, something that's been around for well over a century. And when you look at the most progressive and successful cities in the world that have transformed their urban landscape to make them safer, cleaner, more efficient, more livable, it's cities like Paris and cities like Copenhagen and cities like New York City and cities like Montreal, which ripped up the infrastructure of cars, which made it more difficult and expensive to drive, and replaced that with thousands and thousands of kilometers of bike lanes, of pedestrian areas. It took something that was largely an analog technology, two wheels, some rubber, some air, you know, a couple, you know, parts or whatever, whether they're electric bikes, assist bikes, or just good old classic bicycles. And they studied what had happened. And they actually moved backward and undid a lot of the so-called technological future progress of mid-20th century urban planning, which was, let's put a highway through it, the old Robert Moses playbook. You see this in other things as well that we saw during the pandemic. People falling in love with sourdough baking. It was literally undoing all the technological progress of bread, which is kind of plain white Wonder Bread, I guess, is the, you know, what bread that lasts for 2 weeks, and getting back to the way that bread was made, you know, 300-400 years ago. It's opening up patios in front of restaurants, something that once happened until cities regulated them to make parking spaces, and saying, hey, this is actually a vision of progress. So don't look for progress as something new, something shiny, as a new gadget or a new piece of technology or something very complicated, like the smart cities that are pitched to us by companies like Sidewalk Labs, which is owned by Google, or by, you know, the Saudi Arabian government, as, oh, well, this is the future because, you know, we're going to have flying skyscrapers and drones delivering us things. Look for the most innovative and transformative ideas that are the most timeless ones, because those are the ones that actually improve things and change things and build a better future. Number four, the fourth great, fabulous, wonderful insight about the future. No future is inevitable. Now, in the world of digital technology, we've become used to the axiom of Moore's Law. And this is the calculation by Intel founder or co-founder Gordon Moore that circuits, transistor circuits, silicon circuits are going to shrink, you know, every 18 months in half and get twice as powerful and get twice as cheap. And this is sort of the immutable law, the hockey stick curve that says, you know, the growth of any technology and anything is exponential. And we've seen it in certain cases, the growth of music streaming, for example, the growth of internet usage or cell phone usage in other areas. But it's been kind of extrapolated that Moore's Law is applicable to everything in the future. And once a trend is going in one direction, it is inevitable it goes. A couple of years ago, Marc Andreessen, the famous venture capitalist, the founder of Netscape, I believe, made a claim that said, you know, the future of all commerce, of all shopping is online. E-commerce is going to be pretty much 100% of everything we buy within, you know, a decade. And he was saying this, I think, in 2009. And it was just inevitable. Every store was going to be closed. And we saw, you know, the slow, steady growth of e-commerce of companies like Amazon and other companies selling things online over, you know, the past two decades. And it did seem as though there was inevitability. Every year it grew 0.5%, maybe 1% or so. And then at the start of the pandemic, boom, it was like this massive explosion. And everybody was saying, well, this is it. The future is rushed ahead. There's no going back to stores. Everybody had to order everything online. And you saw e-commerce growth jump from, you know, 13% to 16% of all the shopping people were doing is people were buying groceries online who never bought groceries before, or they were buying hardware stuff online. They were buying whatever you wanted, you know, fish tanks if you wanted to buy them online. And it was seen as this inevitable thing. This is it. There is no going back. How many times did we hear this is the new normal and there's no going back? But then as soon as stores opened up, what did you see? You saw lineups outside them. You saw people going back to the grocery store to buy the groceries they could just as easily order online. They wanted to touch the melons. They wanted somewhere to go. They wanted to have a shopping outing on a weekend. They wanted to be able to touch and feel and do the things that they couldn't do online. And actually, e-commerce growth has not only stalled, but turned back. It's gone back to the levels it was almost at the beginning of the pandemic, if not before that. Why is that? It's because it wasn't a simple narrative, and it wasn't actually inevitable that people wanted e-commerce, but they also wanted things that e-commerce couldn't deliver. There was a limit to it, and that's okay. That doesn't mean that e-commerce is doomed and it's going to disappear. It's going to be a part of our shopping world. It's going to be part of the way we shop, but it's not going to be the entire thing. And I think it's realizing that no future is inevitable. We build the future we want, and that future is far more complicated and is less binary than we think. A simplistic thinking will equal a simplistic future, but that never arrives. Finally, my fifth great, wonderful, perfect, truly insight on the future is the future has human needs, and the future is human. This, I think, is the biggest lesson that I took from the dark days and years of the pandemic, is as much as we were told that we had been pushed into the digital future had arrived, we were at home, we were now working from home, our kids were learning from home, we were able to watch our greatest performances, plays, concerts from the comfort of our house, we were able to sit at home and get whatever we wanted to delivered to us, we could go to our church service or our synagogue or go to an exercise class from the comfort of our own home. And suddenly we realized as we were doing this, as we were having virtual book clubs, that we needed more. Our bodies craved movement among trees and in the fresh air, not just spinning on a cycle stationary bicycle in our house, looking at a screen of someone else spinning on their bicycle. Our minds needed engagement with other people in front of our face. We couldn't just sit and talk to our friends or our relatives on various screens and feel satisfied with that conversation. The entirety of that notion of the digital future and the future being digital, the whole thing that Mark Zuckerberg and Meta Corporation is sort of pegging its future on, right? That we can create the perfect virtual future was a false one. And one I think that's doomed to fail because we fundamentally, at the end of the day, big surprise here, are human beings. What are human beings? We are not some piece of software. We are not some abstract concept. We are biological creatures who are physical. We have bodies. We are an embodied species. And we live in this world that is physical, that has scents and smells. And our body responds to that. Our mind responds to that. And we cannot simply substitute that with simulations or with digital substitutes. We can't build a future around a particular technology that can replace all those things that we as human needs, nor should we want to. So your future has human needs. And if you're thinking about your own future as an individual, or if you work for a company that's thinking about the future of your organization in an area, say like customer service or products, you need to reflect and realize that if that future doesn't serve the genuine needs of humans, again, not just pieces of data, not just numbers out there on the internet, but actual physical creatures just like you who are in their own little lives and homes and communities and natural areas of the world, if that doesn't feed them and give them something that nourishes their body and nourishes their very souls with the physical stimulation that we need, with the mental stimulation that we need, with the sense of community and all the things that we really missed when we were locked at home, sort of clinging to screens during those months, then the future that you're trying to build is going to fall short. So ask yourself, what is the future that you want to live in? And what is the future that you want to build? Thank you so much for listening to me.
Thank you, David. That was David Sacks with some big ideas from The Future is Analog, How to Create a More Human World. If you want to hear a different vision of the future, have a listen to our book bite for The Metaverse and How It Will Revolutionize Everything by Matthew Ball. They can't both be right, can they? I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.